Krishnamurti, in dialogue with Dr. Alan W. Anderson. J. Krishnamurti was born in South India and educated in England. For the past 40 years, he has been speaking in the United States, Europe, India, Australia, and other parts of the world. From the outset of his life's work, he repudiated all connections with organized religions and ideologies and said that his only concern was to set men absolutely, unconditionally free. He is the author of many books, among them The Awakening of Intelligence, The Urgency of Change, Freedom from the Known, and The Flight of the Eagle. This is one of a series of dialogues between Krishnamurti and Dr. Alan W. Anderson, who is professor of religious studies at San Diego State University, where he teaches Indian and Chinese scriptures and the oracular tradition. Dr. Anderson, a published poet, received his degree from Columbia University and the Union Theological Seminary. He has been honored with a Distinguished Teaching Award from the California State Universities.
Mr. Krishnamurti, we were discussing in our conversation last time meditation, and just as we concluded, you brought up the very beautiful analogy from the flowering of a plant, and it struck me that the order that is intrinsic to the movement of the plant as it flowers is a revelatory image of order that you have been discussing. And we were talking also about the relation of meditation to understanding on the one hand and knowledge on the other, a distinction that's very, very rarely made.
Yes.
Though in ordinary language we make the distinction, perhaps unwittingly. It's there. We have the two words.
Right.
But then to go into what the distinction is was something you were beginning to do, and perhaps we could...
We can go on.
Yes.
So we were talking, if I remember rightly, about control.
Yes.
And we said the controller is the controlled. Mm-hmm. And we went into that sufficiently. And when there is control, there is direction. Direction implies will. Control implies will, and in the desire to control, there is established a goal and a direction.
Mm-hmm.
Which means to carry out the decision made by will, and the carrying out is the duration of time.
Yes.
And therefore direction means time, control, will, and an end. All that's implied in the word control. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, what place has will in meditation and therefore in life?
Yes.
Or it has no place at all. That means there is no place for decision at all. Only seeing, doing. And that doesn't demand will. No direction.
Mm-hmm.
When you follow...
Yes, I do.
The beauty of this, how it works out. When the mind sees the futility of control, because it has understood the controller is the controlled, one fragment trying to dominate other fragments, and that the dominant fragment is a part of other fragments,
mm-hmm.
and therefore it is like going round in circles, never vicious circle, never getting out of it. So can there be a living without control? Just listen to this. without will, and without direction. There must be direction in the field of knowledge. Agreed. Otherwise, I couldn't get home, the place I live. I would lose the capacity to drive a car, ride a cycle, speak a language, do all the technological things necessary in life. Their direction, calculation, decision, in that field is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Choice is necessary between this and that. Here, where there is choice, there is confusion. Because there is no perception. Where there is perception, there is no choice. Choice exists because the mind is confused between this and that.
Mm-hmm.
So, can a life be led without control, without will, without direction? That means time. And that's meditation. Not just a question, an interesting, perhaps, a stimulating question, but when a question, however stimulating, has no meaning by itself. It has a meaning in living.
I was thinking about ordinary language usage again, as you were speaking. It's interesting, isn't it, that when we regard that somebody has performed an action that we call willful,
of course,
that this is an action that has been undertaken without understanding.
Of course.
So, in the very distinction between will as a word and willful as an adjective, we have a hint of this distinction.
Yes.
But I'd like to ask you, if I could, about the relationship of will for the moment, even though we're talking about meditation. We did regard that knowledge in its own right does have a proper career.
Of course.
And we say that decision is referred to that, choice is referred to that, and therefore will is operative there.
And a direction, everything.
And a direction, and so on. So we are making a distinction here between will and its role in relation to the whole field of what we call loosely know-how.
Know-how, knowledge.
Yes. And the confusion that occurs when that activity, so necessary in its own right, is brought over.
That's right.
Into this.
That's right.
And then we can't do either of them, really.
Then we are... That's just...
Can we?
Therefore, we become inefficient.
Yes.
Personal.
But, you see, we don't think that. What we think is that we can be terribly efficient in knowledge and be what is called unspiritual.
Yes.
And be a success here and not be a success here. Whereas, if I understand you correctly, you fail... You don't fail in one or the other. You just fail, period. It's a total failure if this confusion is made.
That's simply right.
Can't operate even well here, no matter what it might look like in the short run.
As long as you are not completely in order inside yourself.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the very division that we make between inner and outer is itself a symptom.
Symptom.
Of this
of
terrible
thought, which has divided the outer and the inner.
Yes. I hope you'll bear with me in going through that.
Yes, that's
because
absolutely, you're quite right.
I know in religious thought, my academic discipline, in religious thought, this confusion. Well, the weight of it.
I know.
You feel.
A prayer.
And as soon as you begin to make a comment of any kind about it, that is simply raising the question. The extreme rigidity and nervousness that occurs
quite
is dramatic. Yes.
You see, sir, so I'm asking, Meditation covers the whole field of living, not one segment of it. Therefore, living a life without control, without the action of will, decision, direction, achievement. Is that possible? If it is not possible, it's not meditation. Mm-hmm. Therefore, life becomes superficial, meaningless, and to escape from that meaningless life, we chase all the gurus, the religious entertainments, circuses, you follow all the practice of it has no meaning.
You know, well, of course you do. It's a rhetorical question.
You know,
In the classical tradition, we have a definition of will. We say that it's desire made reasonable.
Desire made
reasonable. Now, of course, we've long since lost the idea of what the ancients meant against their contemplative background by the word reason. We think it means calculation. But, of course, that's not what the classical tradition means when it says reasonable. It points rather to that order which isn't defined. And it occurs to me that if we understood that statement correctly, we'd be saying will is the focus of desire without my focusing self-consciously.
Yes, that's right. And watching desire to flower.
Yes.
And therefore watching the will in operation and let it flower, and as it flowers, as you are watching, it dies. It withers away.
Yes.
After all, it's like a flower. You allow it to bloom, and it withers.
It comes to be and passes away in its own
therefore,
time.
If you are choicelessly aware of this movement of desire, control, will, focusing that will in action, and so on, so on, so on. Let it, watch it. And as you watch it, you'll see how it loses its vitality.
Mm.
So there is no control. So from that arises the next question, which is, direction means space.
Right? Yes, of course.
It's very interesting.
It is.
What is space? Space which thought has created is one thing. Space that exists in heaven, in the universe, space. There must be space for a mountain to exist. There must be space for a tree to grow. There must be space for a flower to bloom.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is space? And have we space? Or are we all so limited physically to living in a little apartment, little houses, no space at all, outwardly, and therefore, having no space, we become more and more violent.
Yes.
I don't know if you have watched of an evening when all the swallows are lined up on a wharf.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And how exact spaces they have in between. You follow, sir?
It's marvelous.
To see this space. And space is necessary. And we have no space physically, more and more population and all the rest of it, and therefore more and more violence, more and more living together in a small flat, 1,000 people, crowded, breathing the same air, thinking the same thing, seeing the same television, seeing the same, reading the same book, going to the same church, believing the same thing, you follow? The same sorrow, the same anxiety, the same fears, my country, your all that. So mind and so the brain has very little space. And And space is necessary. Otherwise, yes. I stifle. So, can the mind have space? And there will be no space if there is a direction.
Clearly, yes.
You see, sir?
Of course.
Yes, I do. Huh? Yes.
There is no space if direction means time. So can the... And when the mind is occupied with family, with business, with God, with drink, with sex, with experience, occupied, filled, there's no space.
That's right. Exactly.
So, when knowledge occupies the whole field of thought, of the mind as thought, there's no space. And thought creates a space around itself. As the me enclosed and you enclosed. We and they. Mm-hmm. So, the self, the me, which is the very essence of thought, has its own little space. And that, and to move out of that space is terror, is fear, is anxiety. Because I'm only used to that little space.
Yes, exactly. That brings us back to the earlier conversation we had when we touched the point of terror.
Yes, that's right.
Amazing.
The not being, and the being is in the little space which thought has created. So thought can never give space.
Of course not.
So, meditation is the freedom, is the freeing of the mind, of its content as consciousness, which creates its own little space. You follow, sir?
Yes, I do.
So, from that sense, is this possible? Because I'm occupied with my wife, my children, my responsibilities. I care for the tree, I care for the cat, I care for this and that. And I'm occupied.
This throws a marvelous light on that saying of Jesus, which people have pondered and wondered about and thought is very strange. Foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. That he doesn't, man as such, who grasps himself, understands, is not inventing a space for himself. It fits perfectly. That's marvelous.
I don't know.
I understand. But I was thinking in the context of the whole discourse. It just flashed over me, and our conversations have been such a revelation to me. With respect to the literatures that I've soaked myself in for so many years. And it's a demonstration to me of what you've said, for instance, insofar as I ask these questions of myself personally, precisely as they become answered.
Quite
so all these things out here become answered, and what could be more empirically demonstrable to an individual that I am the world and the world is me.
That's right.
So all I'm doing is just giving a report on the journey without direction.
So, sir, look, as the world is getting more and more overpopulated, cities are going more and more, spreading, suburbs and so on. Man is getting less and less space. Mm-hmm. They are for driving out animals, killing before.
Oh, dear, yes.
Killing the American Indians, killing the Indians in Brazil and so on. They are doing this. Actually, it's going on.
Oh, yes.
And having no space out there, outwardly, except on occasions I go often to the country and see myself, oh my God, I wish I could live here. But I can't because I've got myself. So can there be space inwardly? When there is space inwardly, there is space outwardly.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the outward space is not going to give the inner space. The inner space of mind that is free from occupation, though it is occupied at the moment with what it has to do, it is occupied. But free, the moment it finishes, it's over. I don't carry the office to my home. It's over. So space in the mind means the emptying of consciousness of all its content. And therefore, the consciousness which thought as the me has created ends. And therefore, there is space. Mm-hmm. And that space isn't yours or mine, it's space.
Yes, yes. I was thinking of the creation story in Genesis. The appearance of space occurs when the waters are separated from the waters, and we have the vault now over which the birds fly. And this space is called heaven,
isn't it?
And in the context
of... It is heaven. That's right.
Yes, of course.
But then we read that, you see, and we don't...
Fortunately, yeah. I don't read any of those things. I don't want to... Goodness, so space, direction, time, will, choice, control. Mm-hmm. You understand, sir? Mm. Now, all that has importance in my living, in the daily living of my life, of every human being. If he doesn't know what the meaning of meditation, he merely lives in that field of knowledge. And therefore that becomes a prison. And therefore that being a prison, he says, I must escape through entertainment, through gods, through this and through that, through amusement. You know, that's what's actually taking place.
The word vacation.
Vacation, that's right.
Says it all.
Yes, that's
doesn't
right.
It?
Yeah, absolutely.
To vacate is to exit into space.
Space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then we go from one hole to another.
Another hole.
Yeah.
Now, if that is clearly established, perceived in myself, I see the thing operating in my daily life, then what takes place? Space means silence. Mm-hmm. If there is silence, if there is no silence, it's direction. It's the operation of will, I must do, I must not do, I must practice this, I must get this, if all. This should be, should not be, what has been, what should not be, I regret, all that operates. Therefore, space means silence inwardly.
That's very deep. Very, very deep. It, archetypally, we associate manifestation as over against latency with sound.
Yes, sound.
And what you said puts the whole thing into an astonishing
silence
perspective.
Isn't the space between two noises. Silence isn't the cessation of noise. Silence isn't something that thought has created. It comes naturally, inevitably, as you open, as you observe, as you examine, as you investigate. So then the question arises, silence, without a movement. Mm-hmm. Movement of direction, movement of thought, movement of time, or silence. Now, that silence, can that operate in my daily life? I live in the field of noise as knowledge. That I have to do. Mm-hmm. And can is there a living with silence and at the same time the other? The two moving together, two rivers flowing in balance, not division, you follow? In a harmony, there is no division. Is that possible? Because otherwise, if that's not possible, I can, to be deeply honest, I can only live there, in the field of knowledge. I don't know if
you're... Oh, yes.
So, for me, it is possible. Therefore, I'm not saying out of vanity, or I say this in great humility. I say that is possible. It is so. Then what takes place? Then what is creation? Is creation something to be expressed in paint, in poem, in statue, in writing, in being about a baby? Is that creation? Does creation need or must it be expressed? To us it must be expressed, to most people. Otherwise, one feels frustrated, anxious. I am not living. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
All that.
Mm-hmm.
So what is creation? One can only answer that if one has really gone through all this. You understand, sir? Otherwise, creation becomes rather cheap thing.
Yes, it becomes, in terms of the word expressed, simply something pressed out.
Pressed out, of course.
That's all.
At all.
Yes.
Just like the writer, literary people, some of them are everlastingly in battle in themselves with tension and all that, and out of that they write a book, become famous. Hmm?
Yes, the psychological theory that works of art are based on neurosis.
Yeah. Yeah,
which means I'm driven.
Yeah. So what is creation? Is it something, a flowering in which the flower does not know that it is that it is flowering?
Exactly.
Have I made it clear?
Yes, you've made it very, very clear. All through our conversations, the one word that has, for me, been like the clean blade of a two-edged sword has been this word, act.
Yes, sir.
But not act over against inaction.
No.
Not action as over against the philosophical term of its opposite, passion, which is a different use from the one that you were using in our conversations. But sheerly act. Sheerly act.
So, sir, see what takes place. Huh? Creation in my living. You follow, sir? Expressing, creating a beautiful chair, this, that may come, that will come. But in living. And from that arises another question, which is really much more important. Thought is measure. And as long as we cultivate thought, and all our actions based on thought as it is now, the search for the immeasurable has no meaning. Mm-hmm. I can give a meaning to it. Say there is the immeasurable. There is the unnameable. There is the eternal. Don't let's talk about it. It's there. It has no meaning. That's just a supposition, a speculation, or the assertion of few who think they know. One has discarded all that. Therefore, now, when the mind is utterly silent, what is the immeasurable? You follow, sir? What is the everlasting? What is the eternal? Not in terms of God and, you know, all these things man has invented. Actually to be that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, silence in that deep sense of that word opens the door. Because you've got there all your energy. Not a thing is wasted. There is no dissipation of energy at all. Therefore, in that silence is summation of energy.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Not stimulated energy, not self-projected energy, and so on. So that's all too childish. Because there's no conflict, no control, no reaching out or not reaching.
Mm-hmm.
Searching, asking, questioning, demanding, waiting, praying, none of that. Therefore, there is tremendous, all that energy which has been wasted is now gathered in that silence.
Mm-hmm.
That silence has become sacred. Because obviously,
of course it has.
It has not the sacred thing which thought has invented.
No, not the sacred over against the profane.
And all no. That kind of stuff.
No.
So, it is the only such a sacred mind can see this, the most supreme sacred. The essence of all that is sacred, which is beautiful.
I do.
So there it is. Mm-hmm. God isn't something that man has invented, or created it out of his image and longing and failure. But it, when the mind itself becomes sacred, then it opens the door to something that is immeasurably sacred. That is religion. And that affects the daily living. The way I talk, the way I treat people, conduct, behavior, all that. That is the religious life. If that doesn't exist, then every other mischief will exist. However clever, however intelligent, however all that.
And meditation does not occur in the context of all this disorder.
No.
Absolutely not. But in its ongoingness, the way you have mentioned it, one is precisely in that. Where what your word religious is pointing to.
Oh, that's the most profound religious way of living. See, so what takes place, another thing. See, as this thing is happening, because your energy is being gathered.
Mm-hmm.
Energy is being gathered, not your. Energy is being gathered. You have other kinds of powers, extrasensory power. You can do miracles. It has happened all this to me. Exercise. and that kind of stuff. I heal you. But they become totally irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Not that you don't love people. On the contrary, religion is the essence of it. But they're all secondary issues. And people get caught in the secondary issues. I mean, look what's happening. A man who really can heal, he becomes... people worship him. Little healing.
Yeah? Reminds me of a story you told me once. I think it was a year ago when... It was about the old man sitting on the banks of the river, and the young man came to him after the older man had sent him away to undertake whatever he needed to learn and all this, and he came back with a marvelous announcement that he could now walk on water. And you said that the older man looked at him and said, what's all that about? So you can walk on water. And you've taken all these years to learn how to walk on water. Didn't you see the boat over there?
Yes, that's right.
Of course.
You see, sir, that's very important. When there is this... Religion is, as we said, is the gathering of all energy, which is attention. In that attention, many things happen. Some of them have this gift of healing, miracles. I've had it, and I know of which I'm speaking about. And religious man never touches it. You follow? Mm-hmm. He may say occasionally do this or that, but it isn't. It is a thing to be put away, like a gift. Like a talent is to be put away because it's a danger.
Exactly.
And the more you are talented, the more me. Mm-hmm. I am important. I have this talent. Worship me. With that talent, I get money, position, power. So this too is a most dangerous thing. So a mind that's religious is aware of all. And lives a life
in this space, in this marvelous space. Something occurred to me about our discussion earlier concerning energy and your remark that energy, when it patterns itself, I've forgotten what you use to designate what the patterned energy was, but I suspect it's what we often call matter.
Matter, yes, quite.
Well, wouldn't that be correct?
Yes.
Right. In terms of this pointing to act that you have mentioned, it throws a very, very different light on the character of patterned energy and draws our gaze away from the pattern and reminds us that the substance, or rather the substantive element, I don't want to use the word substance there for philosophical reasons, the substantive element that we point to is not the pattern but the energy.
Energy, quite. See, sir, that is love, isn't it, sir? When there is this sense of religious summation of energy, that is love, that's compassion, that and care, that operates in daily life.
In love, the pattern never resists change.
Yes. So you see, sir, that's love. You can do what you like. It'll be still love. But there the love becomes sensation. You follow?
Yes. Yes, on the whole track of knowledge. Yes.
And therefore there is no love there.
Yes, that image of the Lionel train, the toy that goes round and round, isn't that extraordinary?
You see, sir, that means, can the mind, I'm using the word mind, in the sense mind, the brain, the body, the whole thing, can the mind be really silent? Not induced silence. Not silence put together. Not silence that thought imagines its silence. Not the silence of a church or the temple. They have their own silence. When you enter a temple or old cathedrals, they have an extraordinary sense of silence. Thousands of people chanted, talked, prayed, all that, but it is above all that. Mm-hmm. It is not that either. So, this silence isn't contrived. And therefore it is real. It isn't I have brought about through practice a silence.
No, it's not what you mentioned earlier, that space between two noises.
Yes, that's right.
Because that would become an interval.
Yeah, that's right.
And as an interval, it simply becomes successive.
Successive, that's right.
This is extraordinary in terms of the continuing return to question. It seems to me that it's only in the attitude of the question that there's any possibility for even intuiting from afar the possibility of the silence, since already the answer is a noise.
So, sir, there's something very interesting. Does this come about through questioning?
No, I didn't mean to suggest that questioning generates it. I meant that simply to take a step back from the enthrallment and enchantment with answers is in itself a necessary step. And that in itself has its own terror.
Of course. But I'm asking, is silence, is this sense of immeasurable, does that come about by my questioning?
No.
Perception sees the false and discards the false. There is no question. It sees and finished. Mm-hmm. But if I keep on questioning, I keep on doubting. Doubt has its place, but it must be kept on a leash. Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you a question here, if I may. The act of perceiving is, as you've said, the doing.
There's absolutely
no interval between one.
Where I see danger and I act.
And I act, exactly. Now, in this perceiving, the act is totally free.
Yes, sir.
Then every energy pattern is free to become change.
Yes, quite.
Yes, exactly. No more hoarding to itself.
No regret.
All that it's worked for all its life. And amazingly, though, it seems to me, if I've understood you correctly, there's a corollary to this. Not only is the pattern free to be changed, but the energy is free to pattern itself. Or not to pattern. Yes.
There it is. And the knowledge has to pattern.
Of course.
But here it can't pattern. Pattern for what? If it patterns, it is becomes thought again. Mm-hmm. And therefore thought is divisive, thought is superficial. I don't know if I told you the other day, somebody was telling me, Professor Bohmrill, in fact, he was saying that in Eskimo language, thought means the outside. Very interesting. The outside, when you say go outside, the word is thought. So thought has created the outer and the inner. If thought is not, then there is neither the outer nor the inner. That is space. It isn't I've got inner space.
No. We've been talking about meditation in relation to religion, and I simply feel I must ask you to speak about the interrelationship of prayer to meditation, with meditation, because conventionally we always refer to prayer and meditation.
No, I don't. To me, prayer is no place in meditation. To whom am I praying? Whom am I begging, asking?
A prayer as petition has no place
petition,
in it.
That.
Is there any use of the word prayer that would be consonant with what we've been talking about?
If there is no petition, you understand, deeply, inwardly, there is no petition.
No grabbing, grasping.
Because the grabber is the grabbed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
If there is no petition, what takes place? I petition only when I don't understand, when I'm in conflict, when I'm in sorrow, when I'm, you follow? When I'm saying, oh God, I've lost everything. I'm finished. I can't arrive. I can't achieve. Hmm?
When there's no petition, I can look. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, a woman comes to me once, some time ago, she said, I have prayed enormously for years, and I prayed for my refrigerator, and I've got it. Yes, sir. Hmm. I pray for peace, and I live a life of violence all the time. I say, I pray for my country. And I've divided the country, opposed to another country. Hmm? And I pray for my country. It becomes so childish.
In conventional prayers, there is usually both petition and praise. Both
of course,
are there.
Praising and receiving.
And of course...
You must know in Sanskrit... It always begins some parts of it praising, mm-hmm. and then begging.
And yes,
there's a marvelous chant, which is a protection, asking protection of the gods. Mm-hmm. Protection, and he says, "May you protect my steps."
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Praising God, then saying, "Please protect my steps." If there is no petition, because the petitioner is the petitioned, the beggar is the begged, is the receiver, then what takes place in the mind? No asking.
Immense quietude. Immense quietude. The proper sense of whatever the word tranquility points
That's
to.
That's right. That is real peace. Not the phony peace they're all talking about, politicians and the religious people. That's mm. No asking a thing.
There's a very beautiful biblical phrase, the peace that passeth understanding.
Mm. I've heard that phrase when I was a small boy.
Mm. I've always asked myself since a child how it's the case that there's so much talk about such a thing and there's so little evidence of it.
So I think, you know, books have become tremendously important. What they have written, what they have said. And so the human mind has become second hand. Or the mind that has acquired so much knowledge about what other people have experienced about reality. How can such a mind experience or find or come upon that thing which is original?
Not that route.
No. And can the mind empty itself of its content? If it cannot, it cannot. Acquire, then reject, then receive. You follow?
Yes.
Why should I go through all those things? Why can't I say, well, I look. There's no book in the world that's going to teach me. There's no teacher that's going to teach me. Because the teacher is the taught. The disciple is the teacher. I don't know.
No, that is in itself as a statement. If one will, as we said in an earlier conversation, at the inception of looking, if he will hold that very statement, "I am the world and the world is me," is an occasion for healing.
Yes, sir.
But that very statement, "I am the world and the world is me," sounds, as you've said so often, so absurd that at that point one starts to bolt again.
Yeah,
panic again. Meditation, when undertaken as it must be continuously,
and
because we're
means,
talking about that
yes,
movement.
Sir, that means one has to be very, very serious. It isn't a thing that you play with.
No. It's not what's called these days a fun thing.
And
in no
sir.
Sense. No. The discussion that you have undertaken concerning it is so total. In meditation, isn't a thing that you do, among other things.
Oh, for Christ.
No.
That is, sir, meditation means attention, care.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the care for my children, for my neighbor, for my country, for the earth, for the trees, for the animals. Don't kill animals. You follow? Don't kill them to eat. It's so unnecessary. It's part of your... the tradition says you must eat meat.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, sir, all this comes to a sense of deep inward seriousness. And that seriousness itself brings about attention, care, and responsibility in all that we discussed. Seeing that one has gone through all this, one sees it. And the very perception is action, which is wisdom. Because wisdom is the ending of suffering. It isn't callousness, it's the ending of it. And the ending of it means the observation, the seeing of suffering. not to go beyond it, refuse it, rationalize it or run away from it, just to see, let it flower. And as you're choicelessly aware of this flowering, it comes naturally to wither away. I don't have to do something about it.
Marvelous, marvelous how energy can be free to pattern itself or not pattern itself. The pattern is free to be energized, or the whole thing is simply all round.
Yes, it covers the whole of man's endeavor, his thoughts, his anxiety, everything covers.
So in our conversations all through, we have reached a point of consummation here.
Yes.
Where it is round. I wonder if Shakespeare had some intimation of this when he said, ripeness is all. He must have been thinking of that, not simply as setting a term
to
the career of a fruit.
Time comes to an end. Time stops. In silence, time stops.
In silence, time stops.
Good.
Immensely beautiful. I must express to you my gratitude from the bottom of my heart. I hope you will let me, because throughout the whole career of our discussions, I have been undergoing a transformation.
Right. Because you're willing enough to listen, good enough to listen. Most people are not, they won't listen. You took the time, the trouble, the care to listen.
I've already seen in my relation to my classes, in the activity my students and I share, the beginning of a flower.
Flowering, quite right.
The beginning of a flowering.
Right.
Thank you so much again.
No,
thank you, thank you.